Do you feel like your business is running your life instead of the other way around? I'm Roy Castleman. I've built multiple seven-figure companies, worked across continents, and coached high-performing entrepreneurs. But I've also been completely burnt out. At one point, I was barely seeing my daughter, drowning in stress, and one step away from walking away from it all. That's when I made a decision to build a business and a life that works for me. The journey became Elevate 360. A system to help business owners reclaim their time, find their energy again, and get back in control without sacrificing growth. And this podcast, Power Movers, is where I share real stories behind that shift. Each week, you'll hear from entrepreneurs, founders, and leaders who've walked through the fire and come out of the other side with clarity, courage, and a system that works. If you're ready to build a business that gives you more life instead of taking it away, you're in the right place. So I'm here today with Stephen, and Stephen's from Cooker. And Stephen is an entrepreneur who I've been following on LinkedIn for quite some time. But more importantly than that, he's actually somebody that we can look up to. He goes out and he does amazing challenges for things he believes in. He has taken his company from the garage to £100 million turnover. Yeah, and he has vision and foresight. So I'd like to welcome you, Stephen, to Power Movers. And let's tell people a little bit more about yourself. Yeah, just a little bit about your journey.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Roy. It's good to be with you. My journey is an interesting one. I grew up in a family business. Wasn't an academic at school. Didn't really love school curricula. But I suppose really fortunate that I had an entrepreneurial father who had his own business. So my destiny was always set for me. So whether I did well or not at school, there was always an opportunity there for me to join a business. And I suppose I see that as an absolutely huge privilege and one I'm thankful and appreciative of every single day. Yes, wasn't an academic, didn't do exceptionally well at school, left school at the age of 16. I went to a boarding school in Yorkshire called Rishworth, which taught me a lot of skills, gave you discipline, made you make yourself presentable. We had to line up in the mornings and we had our fingernails checked and were our shoes clean and tidy and was a haircut. Although I didn't like the academia side of it, filled me with discipline and how important it was as a person to present. Finished my schooling and was fortunate enough to join my father in his business. And I tell everybody that was my schooling, that was my university. I spent 26 years in the family business, and my father was a tough taskmaster, but he gave me the opportunity to go around every single department, learn every single trade. I spent 2 years in the factory, sanding drawers, cleaning machines, learning how the product was made. Yeah, I spent 2 years in there, and then I got the opportunity to go into every single department: accounts, stock control, logistics, marketing, sales. So huge privilege, and worked in that business, as I say, for 26 years and learned absolutely everything.
Yeah, that was kitchen fitting, wasn't it?
Yeah, so my father, Neville Johnson, who sadly passed away in September last year, was responsible for bringing one of the first fittings into the UK. So he had a company at the time. He started from his garage as well, selling Formica worktops. And he then brought in one of the very first fitted kitchens into England and started a company called Kitchen Queen, which sold fitted kitchens. And he floated that business. So a very successful business, floated it. And then moved on to fitted offices. So he designed and developed the first fitted office. So my father was a true entrepreneur, both in terms of product innovation and in the way he ran his businesses. And I got the most amazing opportunity to learn everything about those type of businesses.
Wow. That's just such, like you say, an amazing opportunity, isn't it? because we never get that in schooling these days. So it really kept, must have been an amazing kind of journey.
Yeah, listen, he was a tough taskmaster, so it
Yeah.
was amazing. I'm a visual learner, so for me, actually being put into a business to learn while doing the job suited me far better than being in a classroom. So it really suited me, and it was a tough environment. It was a 1980s business, very
Okay.
different to today. So the power was not with the people, the power, my father. Exceptionally successful, treated people really well, but the business was run in a ferocious style and it was all about performance. And it was in the days of direct selling. So ultimately, your modicum of success was how many kitchens had you sold or how many offices had you sold. And you would come into the office in the morning after doing your evening pitches and you'd line up with your colleagues and if you hadn't sold one, you would be humiliated. And that ultimately is the way that the businesses in the 80s were run, very aggressively, very performance driven. And as I say, you were treated well if you performed. And the metric of success was principally sales.
Yeah, how the world has changed, huh? How the world has changed.
Significantly. Significantly.
What was your favorite in that journey of that earning everything? What was your favorite department role to be in?
I gravitated to marketing and sales. So that for me, I enjoyed the most because I think I saw with that you could really affect the performance of the business through its marketing and how you sold and how you innovated with that. Yeah, so I would say I leant to the side of sales and marketing, but what I would say is the experiences I gained in production, and listen, I don't want to be a factory manager. I don't enjoy working in factories, but learning and understanding the complexity of a production facility and information needed really served me well in developing my sales and marketing role. So it gave me a huge awareness. And the same with accounts. At school, I think I got probably an E in maths, but I sit here today and I can read a set of accounts. I understand a balance sheet, understand cash flow, understand profit and loss. And principally, I learned all that from sitting next to people in the accounts department. So, in answer to your question, sales and marketing are favored, but I don't underestimate the fact that I got to spend significant time in all those other departments.
Yeah.
Helped me become far better in applying sales and marketing tactics in business. And I'm probably 56 now and really fully appreciate what that has helped me achieve.
Amazing. I must agree. My first company attempt, I used to work on a mushroom farm. And on the way, I was a packing shed manager at a mushroom farm in South Africa. And I'd get down there in the morning at 3 in the morning because your mushrooms don't respect your schedule in any way, shape, or form. And I had these amazing ladies at work packing the mushrooms, and they would sing, and it was just such a beautiful thing. But I finished at 11 o'clock, and so when I finished at 11 a.m., initially people would say, "Bring me some mushrooms, bring me some mushrooms." So I'd take mushrooms home, and then I was like, hang on a second, I'm taking all these mushrooms home. So I literally had a little two-door Golf, Sammy, I called it. And I packed up, 20 bags. I spoke to the farmer and I said, "Can I take some mushrooms to sell them?" And he's like, "Yeah." So I packed up my boot full of mushrooms. I started with 20 bags of mushrooms and I bought them for four and I sold them for five. And I thought, I'll just go and try and sell them to some shops. And I just went out door to door. And that's your baptism in fire. That really is a baptism in fire. But I was selling them and I was knocking on the doors and I was going in, and it was always that worst door, that door that was the ugliest little terrible one. And you go sell, you sell a whole bunch. And then, literally, in 3 months, I was making five times my salary selling mushrooms than I was, and
Wow,
that
that's amazing.
got me into my first, my first entrepreneurial role, just going
Yeah.
making mushrooms. So,
Yeah, really interesting. Really interesting. And then I suppose you say when you come from that background, when you've done the manual labour yourself, so you working on the mushroom farm, or me, I remember fondly, I used to work in the factory and we had in the day a timber draw, we had a wooden draw box, which was one of our USPs. It was a timber dovetail draw box and that really added value to the sale. But I used to make those in the factory and we used to sand them by hand. So when I went to selling the product, I could really resonate with the customers and say, what goes into this drawer box is I ended up at the end of the day with hands that were cut to pieces. And that it really benefited me understanding the production values that I could then take into the sales role to add value to the sales process. And I think that is, yeah, I think modern day. There aren't many of these family businesses around where you get to learn all the different departments or experience all those different things. So I find myself as really fortunate to have been able to grow up in that environment and really fortunate.
Another way you're so grateful for things, because I think so often we forget where we come from, or people forget where they come from, and they don't honor the past, and it's just so important.
Listen, I suppose people would look at me as a privileged individual. I went to grammar school, went to boarding school, grew up in a family where I didn't had all the material things that I wanted, but I really valued the learning that I got in the business. And for me, I will never ever forget that. And I take that through into every day. I'm really appreciative for the simple thing in life. And it's funny, in my business here, our colleagues get their lunches paid for. We do that as a staff perk, that if anybody works in my business, we pay for the lunch. And I sometimes go out and I think, do they really appreciate it? And me, as I'm running the business, it's a 100 million pound business now. And still, when I go and get my lunch that's paid for by the business, I think, wow, isn't that's amazing. So I'm really grateful. I take time to be grateful for all those things. I think it's really important and to never forget them or take them for granted. And I often say that I was hugely privileged and really appreciative of that.
One of the things that always excites and inspires me is when, as entrepreneurs, what we do is we start somewhere and we have an idea. We have to take a step and actually start. So at some point, you've got all this experience, you're working with your father, and you decide, I'm going to go out and I'm going to go and do it myself. Tell me a little bit about that journey and how you started and.
Yeah, I talk to people a lot about family businesses because they're quite difficult environments. For me, I always say to people, you're the boss's son. So if you do, it's expected you're going to do because you're the boss's son. And if you don't do well, you're only there because you're the boss's son. So it doesn't matter. So for me, the family business environment was hugely, yeah, as I say, it was a huge privilege to learn in that environment. And I got opportunities because it was a family business that probably my academia wouldn't have granted me in other people's businesses. And I'll come on to that because when I left my business, I went looking for a job and it was a difficult experience. But I suppose you develop your own thought processes and your own personality. And when I started in my dad's business at 16, 17, I was learning. And as time evolved, as I matured in that business and watched how it developed, there were certain things that I used to think to myself, I'd probably do that a little bit differently, maybe. I maybe achieve a better outcome by doing something differently. So as successful as I was in my father's business, and as successful as the business was, I don't really feel that I proved myself or in my own as my own person. And the other challenge is always being in your father's shadow and people not seeing you for who you are. Although I was my father's son, I had a completely different personality to him and a different way of working. And it was very difficult to get people to see you for who you were and respect you for your achievements when you're in that family business environment. in your father's shadow. Now, that's not to say he cast his shadow far and wide and made everybody think that I was there because of he, but it was just the perception of everybody within the business or the suppliers or customers you spoke to. You were the boss's son, and therefore I found it difficult to have my own personality and identity. Ultimately, we sold the business as a successful sale, and I decided at the time that I wanted to go and work for somebody. I wanted to actually go and see if I was any good. Was
Okay.
I my father's son and just there because I was his son, or was that could I run a business? Could I achieve anything? And were the ideas that I had workable, and would they work in a business? And therefore, I decided that we sold the business, and I decided instead of to continue to work, I was going to leave and go and look for a job. And
How
wow,
did you choose what job to look for?
I did. I
Because now
thought I
you're
just
all
didn't. I
up
just
in
listen. I very fortunate, I suppose, that financially I wasn't under immense pressure, which again is a huge privilege and comfort. So it was something that I could take time to do, but actually, no, I suppose I didn't want to. Our business with kitchens and office furniture, and there was a part of me that thought I can't go and compete with that business because ultimately, then it's pretty much more of the same. I'm doing exactly what my dad's done, and I'm going to be compared with him. So I didn't want to go and compete with the family business in any way, shape, or form. So I thought I'll go into the job market and ultimately see if anyone will employ me. It was fairly simple that I was going to go and get a job for anybody anywhere because I ultimately had a CV that was 25 years in a family business, which I thought would look okay, but I needed experience elsewhere. So I principally started applying for jobs. And my goodness me, that was eye-opening because it was exceptionally difficult. Lots of people didn't respond. Lots of people said, yeah, you've only worked in a family business, so actually you've got no skill sets. And I used to sit and think, my goodness me, if you'd worked in my family business and understood what I'd had to do to get where I got to, and seen how I'd had to perform to get to where I would, you wouldn't have that opinion. But really, nobody valued my experience, and therefore the job hunting was exceptionally difficult, really difficult. And I applied for thousands and thousands of jobs and ultimately really struggled. And then I stumbled across an advert in the Sunday Times for Rucker. And I thought, this looks interesting. A tap that does boiling water. And they were a Dutch company and very small Dutch company at the time. This was around 2006. And they were looking for somebody to establish the UK and Ireland for them. And I applied for the job. And after three interviews, I got to meet the founders of the business, the Petrie family, and I met them at a hotel in London for an interview and got through to the final stage. And they invited me to their head office in the Netherlands. And they ultimately gave me the job to establish Cooker in the UK and Ireland. And that was the beginning of my journey.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah, I came into the UK with a grand total of £75. I had £75 left, after being in Earl's Court for a little while. And my first proper job was for the BBC, and it was a spreadsheet operator. Slight problem though, I didn't know what a spreadsheet was. So walking down past White City, I went down the road past White City and towards the White City BBC, and there's a shop on the side. And I walked past and it's selling Word and Excel training. I was like, okay, that's what I need. So I went in there and I said to the lady, listen, here's the deal. Yeah, I've got an interview in half an hour's time, but yeah, I don't know what the extra spreadsheet is. But if I get the job, I'll come back and do your £70 course. I've got £70 left. Yeah. And so she bless her, she was awesome. And Diane, and she like, you know, sat me down and we showed me, okay, so do this. Fully armed off, I went into the BBC, and it's such an imposing building. I just, yeah. I walked in, sat down, and I got my first £10 an hour job in the BBC. And
Wow, amazing.
they said, can you start tomorrow? And I was like, no, I've got 3 days. I think I've got to come back in 3 days' time. So yeah, food was hard for a couple of weeks while we didn't have, you know, you didn't have a paycheck. But yeah, so I started in there, and yeah. So I'm now imminently unemployable, and I just yeah.
Interesting journey.
So how did you then, what was the evolution of Kuka?
So I'd seen the product in England and thought, fascinating, got potential. Went to the Netherlands, and at the time, head office in the Netherlands was, it's a small business. They only operated in the Netherlands and in Denmark. So it was only a relatively small business. I think it was a maybe a 10, 15 million euro turnover business. And saw the product and I thought, this has got potential. This is something that ultimately I can persuade people to buy. And the vision was to develop the UK and Ireland. They wanted to establish a £10 million business within the next 10 years. I think the first thing I did when I went in the office was check whether they had any money in the bank. They wouldn't buy me a car. They gave me a hire car at the time because they weren't sure it was going to work. So I went to the Netherlands. I got a hire car and a brochure and a week's training. And they ultimately said, right, off you go and sell some taps in the UK. And
I love it.
yeah, go and make us a business. And ultimately, that was 2000, late 2006, early 2007. And principally, the Kuka offer was they motivate a kitchen shop to display the product and then sell it to a customer when they come in. That was the model in the Netherlands. My business experience was a mixture of I'd done direct to consumer, so I'd sold kitchens to retailers and end consumers, and I'd sold offices to blue chip companies and to home offices. And for me, I decided at the early stage that I was going to follow their strategy of direct to retail. But simultaneous to that, I had an ambition to set up direct to consumer as well. So very different to their strategy. They had a single strategy. It was my intention to have a dual strategy. But principally, year one, used to go to Holland. So on my first week, I picked up 30 Kukas. Used to go and pick them up, drive them back to the UK. It was a 11-hour trip door to door. So I'd go and pick up 30 kook, and people say to me, why was it 30? And I said, that's all that would fit in the car. And I plotted all the kitchen shops in the UK. And I spent the first year on my own, driving up and down the country, visiting kitchen shops, persuading the kitchen shops that this was a product that's got potential and something that they should put on display. And I had a very simple strategy. I remember it fondly. I sold 333 displays in my first year. So my strategy was every customer I went to see, I wanted to sell them a Kuka for their showroom to display, one for home, so they'd be using it at home. And I would always leave them one on the shop floor to sell to the next customer. So every appointment I went to, my objective was to principally, I say sell, we offered a discount on the, ultimately when we started, we offered a displaying discount, which is the same thing, so it was half price. So principally, my objective was to visit as many dealers as I could. And a successful outcome of that meeting would be to leave them with three Kukas, one for display, one for the shop floor and one for the house. And that is how I started the business. Simultaneous to that, I needed to motivate the dealers to sell the product. So I needed customers to, I thought that the best way to motivate a dealer to sell it is to get customers to go in and ask for it. So I thought, how am I going to get customers to go and ask for a product that people don't know about? So I persuaded the owner, Walter Petri, who still runs the business today, to allow me to do a few adverts. And at the time, it was a very frugal business. Principally, you operated within the cash reserves you had. I think we established the business in the UK with 50,000 capital. And ultimately, you couldn't over, you had to work within, principally, you had to work within your capital constraints. And I managed to persuade him to allow me to do some small adverts in local press. So what I would do is target an area where I've been successful in leaving a number of products and then advertise in that area for customers to go and see at the kitchen shop. And that principally got the ball rolling. But what was really interesting and helped me, when I put those adverts in, I got customers phoning me that didn't have a kitchen that wanted a tap. So by deploying that strategy, what I simultaneously did was also grow direct to consumer, because I was putting an advert in the paper, and if the customer didn't want a kitchen, I would sell them a tap for home. So I'd like to claim that was my strategy, but actually it just came out of what I did, and ultimately that gave me the foundations to develop and grow the business. And ultimately, from that point on, it's continued to grow in that way. And therefore, so yeah, my first year, I sold 1,000 systems, 999 actually, which was made up of 333,
One more.
333 for the shop floors, 333 for the dealer, and 333 for display. And those were the foundations on which I grew the business. Every time I'd sold my third, I used to sit with, I worked from a home office. So we didn't invest in an office. I worked from my IKEA desk at home, built the business from there. So I used to travel during the night, visit my customers during the day. And then every time I'd sold my 30, I'd drive back to the Netherlands, taking any return stock back and picking up another 30. And that's how the business started.
I think you said something earlier on that really resonated. The sales is the one thing that can really drive a business forward. The lessons that I'm taking and the lessons that I've taken from the sales journey, you went into and sold to 111 shops. And from that, though, you must have gone to 500 shops, or there must have been, it's that you have to be thick-skinned enough to keep on going, don't you?
I've got a tenacity, and for me, ultimately, having got the job, it was then for me to be successful. And therefore, I have no boundary when it, if I set myself a target or a focus, then ultimately I'm going to achieve it, because if I don't, I've only got myself to blame. So I was absolutely, I wouldn't drive and drive and visit as many showrooms as I needed to until I'd absolutely sold that product. And that for me, I suppose it's a good personal attribute to have. And but it, yeah, failure wasn't something I would accept ultimately. And the product is amazing. To ultimately go and present this product to people, and it's an incredible product, but I was faced at the time with people, yeah, I hit a lot of barriers and a lot of hurdles. People saying to me, it's madness, it's dangerous, it's never going to work. I've got a kettle. So you have to be very single-minded and also be able to take lots of knocks, because ultimately I might have been into five showrooms before I get to a successful one, and I get thrown out of certain showrooms. And yeah, it was really challenging, but I was proving myself to myself ultimately. Could I make it a success? And it, yeah, it was for me to achieve that. And I suppose I saw myself as fortunate because my targets were identifiable. Ultimately, I wanted a kitchen shop on a high street. So actually, I wasn't struggling with where to go or having to pick up phones. I could get in my car, drive into the centre of, could be Nottingham, Manchester. I'd pick an area, I'd go to a different area each day and spend those days doing six, seven, eight, nine appointments going to kitchen shops. Yeah, that was how it all began.
Amazing. So take you further now, and you've built, what looks like an amazing company to work for. And I really appreciate one of your posts I saw the other day. You had an interview with somebody, and you that you are that they asked what the most important thing was. And you said health. And that's just really, really resonated with me. And that's my one of my big missions is for business owners to understand that they don't have anything if they don't have their health. They really don't. And that's just, how did you get that philosophy?
Because I listen, two philosophies I took from my father's business. One is we looked after our people in a financial way and rewarded them for success, but I don't think we looked after them emotionally. They were driven to perform, and if you didn't perform, you got sacked ultimately. But I have to say, and I'm very careful. That was what business was like at the time, ultimately. We weren't a strange business, but that's how business worked. You were successful, you were rewarded well, and if you weren't successful, you got sacked and out the door. And I always used to think to myself, what if you treated people, what if you took the person that wasn't performing well and actually helped them address that underperformance in a positive way? And the other thing that I always thought was, my growing up in my father's business was an era of drinking, smoking. So I always just remember my dad at the end of the day would get all the managers in at 5 o'clock in the office. They'd all have a drink of Bacardi and Coke or whiskey, all be smoking their cigarettes, all be drinking. And that was how business worked. So it wasn't a healthy mindset. And I always thought to myself, what actually, if you were healthy, fit, and full of energy doing this job? And therefore, one of my ambitions, or a couple of my ambitions when I started Kukulu, was twofold. One, I wanted to create a business and an environment where I could truly care for my people. And secondly, I wanted a business and environment that really took care of health, both mentally and physically. And I'm very careful to say that because ultimately I've arrived at a position now where I can achieve that, and I'll explain how I achieve it. But fundamentally, if you don't have a successful business, you can't do any of what I want to do. So ultimately, it was very clear to me that actually I had to sell taps, I had to give an amazing service, and I had to make profit because ultimately, if I didn't do that, I couldn't do anything else. So ultimately, the first thing for me was create a business, create a brand, and make it successful. Once you've done that, then you can start looking at actually ultimately how you treat people. And ultimately, how you look after them. And therefore, as I got into year two and started to employ people and we became more successful, I absolutely determined that I wanted to have a business that catered for people's mental well-being and welfare, and that I drove a healthy and fit business.
Amazing.
And yeah, ultimately, if you're
And
not healthy,
it's quite a difficult thing to really instill in a company because people have all got their own thoughts and processes on it. They know they should be healthy, but do they want to be healthy? And you can't force it. As a business owner, you can't force it.
no,
You have to lead by example, right?
nothing is forced. So for me, it was a case of leading by example. Everything I do at Kukri is optional. But if I talk about health, what I would explain to people is ultimately, ahead of everything, if you are not healthy, if you're healthy, you've got lots of issues you can deal with every day. If you're not healthy, you've got one big problem. If I'm not going to be here for my family, for my kids, and for this business, they've got a serious problem. So fundamentally, the first thing for me every single day is healthy, fit, mentally stable, and looking after myself. And that ultimately for me is a discipline that I have every single day. My colleagues see the benefits of that. I don't force anybody here to be do what I do, but I would encourage them from my actions that I ultimately you'll become I've become better in my role, better at the job. So I suppose I would lead by example on that.
Would you be happy to share what you do in the morning?
Yeah, so I have a very strict morning routine. I'm up at 5:15. So I'm training for a big walk at the moment, but ultimately I will have a couple of hours in the morning, from 3 hours in fact, from 5:15 to 8:15, where I will do my physical gym work, my breath work, my saunering, my ice work, my yoga, and physically getting ready today. So I have a 3 hour morning routine that gets me prepped for work. And that is the first thing in my diary, and nothing will shift that. Nothing will shift that, because ultimately that's my time. That's an investment in me. And if I don't do that, I'm not going to perform well in the office. So that's my morning routine. It's cast in stone, and I will not change that for anybody. And that's a skill I've learned. In terms of mental health and well-being, what ultimately I've done with that is, it's interesting because I have two, I call them coaches within the business. And it's funny, I often say you go to a football match or you watch a sport and everybody has a view on, well, he's not playing very well, he's not performing very well. And I come into my office and I've got 100 people here and I'm thinking, I don't know how any of them feel. I don't know what issues they've had at home, what their home life is like. So I want people to, for me, I want people to present for work with a clear mind and without stresses. And therefore, in the evolution of KUKA, I brought in a counsellor. So we have, I call her a well-being counsellor. She ultimately deals with any member of staff. I've got 100 people, all from different ages, going through divorce, death, marriage, birth, all challenges. And I want them to be able to deal with those competently so that when they come into KUKA, they can present for work. So I use the counsellor to support our team with any issues that they may have. That's in terms of mental health and well-being. I then have a sports psychologist that deals with the performance side of the business. So again, for me, I want people to turn up for work motivated, driven, and I want high performance, be that in service, sales, fit. I've got installers that do 4 jobs a day. They're going to London on a Friday afternoon at 4 o'clock to a penthouse job where they park the car an hour away from the appointment. I want them to present to that customer happy, smiley faced, and with a good persona. And therefore, I use the sports performance coach to help these people modify their performance and be the best version of themselves. So I invest massively in the mental health and well-being of the people, so they have a resource to go to, which is completely up to them whether they choose to use it or not. And I have the sports psychologist that will work with every member in the business to help them get best outcome. And that might be, there might be a staff member that has an issue with me and might not understand me or might not like what I've said to them, and they therefore have two people that they can go to that they can discuss it with, and then they can approach me on it. So I work tirelessly to provide a business where people feel mentally strong and healthy and fit and feel that they can perform in their best way. And I caveat by saying, I see that as a huge privilege as well. I've had to build a business that can afford to do that. And I'm very careful to say, you can only deploy these things in the business if it's successful. But I've got to say, of all my achievements at KUKA, bringing in those two resources and supporting my team with them are probably two of my proudest moments. And If I ever wasn't at Cooper and started another business, I would have an ambition to bring in that type of support.
Amazing.
And that's always something that I'd want to do. And I'd always, in my dad's business, thought, would it work? And what's been really exciting and motivating is to be able to take that idea that I had in my dad's business, evolve Kuka so I can implement it here and think, my goodness me, it does work. If you actually look after people and treat them well, you get a better performance than that. And if you don't, and if they're healthy and fit, they perform better.
And they're happy, and that's so important, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
Yeah,
that's
I want a happy team. I
yeah.
want a happy team. And you have to create an environment where people can be happy.
Yeah. So I want to, we're getting short on time, and I really want to touch on your passion at the moment. I was totally blown away. 1,000 miles in 31 days. And then now you have an even bigger challenge. And I know this
Yeah, so
of deep in the heart.
yeah, so for me, listen, life is about giving a bit back. So there's two things that I carry with me every day. I see my opportunities with my father as a huge privilege, and therefore in my business, I am always keen and always give opportunities to as many people as I can, whatever age, whatever background. And for me, I do that because I ultimately was privileged. So I do that. The second thing is, I see myself as being really fortunate. And therefore, I like to be charitable and give a little bit back. So last year, sadly, I lost my mother as an 18-month-old. And last year, I decided to do a walk in her memory for a charity called Grief Encounter. And last August, I did, 31 days of walking in the coastline of Spain, raised proudly £50,000 for charity, and did 1,000 miles and 2 million steps. And yeah,
I watched your journey with awe. I was like,
Yeah, so
okay.
and walked in silence, so walked with my own thoughts every day. And listen, it was exceptionally difficult, a really tough challenge, both physically and mentally. But I came out of it really proud that we'd raised money for charity. And as difficult as it was, I found it really rewarding. Sadly, 2 weeks after I came back, my father passed away. So he'd suffered with dementia, and he suddenly, we lost him September last year, September the 23rd. And I thought, yeah, I'm going to have to do something in his memory. So I thought last year was a big challenge. I went onto Google, I looked and looked, what's the most? Because I did 2 million steps last year in 31 days. And I looked, I typed in, I think it was in chat, I said, what's the most steps anybody's walked in a month? And I think there's a world record. It's 2.5 million. So I thought, okay, that's straightforward enough. I'm going to do a challenge for my dad, and I'm going to do more than 2.5 million steps. And last year I did it in Spain, and I thought, I want to do it slightly differently this year. So I thought, I'm going to walk through the Kuka offices in Europe.
Okay,
So I
cool.
went on Google, and I thought, what is the distance and steps between the European Kuka offices? And bizarrely, it was 2,000 kilometers and 2.6 million steps. And I thought, there you go. So
That's a sign. That's a sign from the universe,
that's a
right?
sign. So in August this year, August the 1st this year, I will start my journey in Germany with a couple of colleagues from Kuka, and we're working from Germany, Netherlands, Belgium, France, and Spain over 31 days. So we're going to do 2.6 million steps, 2,000 kilometers, and I have an ambition to raise 100,000 for charity. So that is this year's challenge.
Amazing, and you're going to do it. Yeah, you will 100% do it. Yeah,
No
you
question.
rooting for you all the way. I'll be shouting from
Thank
the
you
rooftop.
so much.
Yeah, so amazing. I'm going to wrap up now. I know you've got a tight schedule, and I just want you, potentially give me one thing that you've learned in business that business owners can really take away from this. What's the most important thing for you as an entrepreneur, business owner, and something that can really resonate?
Understand your people and be kind.
I love it. Be kind. So powerful.
Be
Thanks
kind.
very much. Yeah, thanks very much, Stephen. It's been amazing having you on. And we will follow your journey with excitement.
Thank you so much for having me, Roy. Really good to see you.
And if anybody wants to get hold of you, I shall put your details on the bottom and they can get that sponsorship going.
That's very kind. Thank you so much.
All righty. Cheers.
Thank
Thanks for
you.
listening to Power Movers, the podcast from All the Power, where our mission is to help business owners reclaim their time, reset their energy, and live the life they love. If this episode sparked something for you, your next step is simple. Take the fit check at allthepower.co.uk. It's a short clarity tool that helps you see where you are, what's getting in the way, and what might be possible if you have the right system. When you're ready, come and join the tribe. Power Movers start with our signature framework called Elevate 360, a system built to help you escape survival mode, create structure, and move forward with power. Just remember, everything we share here is based on real stories, experience, and frameworks. It's not personal business advice. Always speak to a coach or advisor before making big decisions. Because in the end, it's about more than business. It's about building a life that you actually love. I'm Roy Castleman, and I'll see you in the next episode.